Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Around the World in 80 Years. Vatican Radio was officially inaugurated by Pope Pius XI exactly 80 years ago, and we examine some of the highlights of its past history and get a sneak preview on what new projects are in store for the future. And Faith in a Better World. We find out more about a UK network of over 60 charities, religious orders and dioceses that have just launched a new website resource on Catholic social teaching.
Iar caro Dei Consilium, succedimus in loco principis apostolorum, eorum lempe, quorum doctrina et predicatio,
the voice of Pope Pius XI, who with this speech pronounced exactly 80 years ago, officially gave birth to Vatican Radio. That momentous day on February the 12th, 1931, marked the first time in the long history of the Church that a Pope had sent his voice throughout the world. Vatican Radio's mission, then and now, is to broadcast news about the Pope, the Universal Church and world news, and help listeners to evaluate today's problems in the light of the Church's teaching.
Mira sane ope Marconiana.
The radio's transmitting station was built by the inventor of radio, Guglielmo Marconi, and was inaugurated by Pope Pius with that radio message in Latin, written by the pontiff himself and addressed to the whole world, in which he stressed the universality of the gospel message. If we browse through the press coverage of that day, the journalists clearly convey the intense excitement triggered by that historic event. The Vatican's own newspaper, the Osservatore Romano, wrote,
"In Rome, all the radio sets were turned on. Groups of people gathered around the wonderful apparatus to listen. Loudspeakers were placed outside many electric and appliance shops. There were crowds everywhere, blocking the traffic in some areas."
In Britain, an article in the News Chronicle Daily read,
"For the first time, the voice of a Pope was heard in London and by millions of other believers about the world. 3,500 Catholics stood for hours in Westminster Cathedral, waiting to hear the voice of the pontiff."
Whilst an editorial in the New York Herald said,
"Few events in the history of the world can compare with the profound impact the head of the Holy Roman See made during his address directed to the entire planet. This is a miracle of science, and no less, a miracle of faith."
Laudator Jesus Christus.
Aquí Radio Vaticano, programa español.
Ici Radio Vatican.
这里是梵蒂冈广播电台.
El Mejdu li Yesu al Mesih.
Cari fratelli e sorelle.
Pope Benedict on Sunday arrived back at the Vatican for the recitation.
Pagine e fogli.
Chiedete di serenità.
Date una carezza ai vostri bambini.
Treffpunkt Weltkirche.
80 years on from its inauguration, Vatican Radio is still going strong and now offers programmes in over 40 languages that are broadcast via the internet, satellite, as well as via the more traditional shortwave, medium wave and FM radio bands. But let's review some of the highlights of the radio's history since its inauguration and find out more about its future direction. I sat down with Sean Patrick Lovett, director of Vatican Radio's English programme and of its live Italian channel, who has worked at the radio since 1977. I began by asking him, how many languages did the radio start off with?
Well, it started out in Latin, the Scientiarum Nuncius Radiophonicus. It was really a scientific program. Pius XI was a closet scientist. He was fascinated by this idea that you could speak into a piece of metal on this side of the world and be heard right across the other side of the world. And they were very simple programs. But within about 5 years after the Vatican Radio's inauguration in 1931, the radio was already broadcasting in five different languages, including English, Italian, French, Spanish and German. And there were regular programs being broadcast in these five different languages.
Has its essential role and mission changed substantially since then?
Not according to the mission statement. The mission statement of Vatican Radio is basically that our charge is to get the Pope's message out as quickly and as effectively as possible. I know that's a kind of narrow paraphrase, but that's what it is. And to use whatever means possible, whatever technical means possible there is at our disposal. And that's what we've been doing for 80 years. We started with shortwave. We moved into FM. When satellite broadcast arrived, we were up there with the best of them. And now, yes, we're into internet technology just like anyone else. We were amongst the very first, and I love reminding people about this, the Vatican Radio was among the very, very first radio stations to use podcasting, which we dubbed Godcasting when it first
began. Yes, I remember.
But we've always been in the avant-garde of looking how technology can help us get that message out.
Okay, but looking back, first of all, at some of the highlights of its history, it performed a very valuable service, didn't it, during the Second World War, when it transmitted messages for people trying to retrace their loved ones, prisoners of war and refugees. But it's not something that's publicised or not sort of talked about a lot. And there were a huge amount of messages, weren't there, that went out.
We have a very short memory, a very short historical memory. I mean, even before that, looking at the main moments, the very inauguration of Vatican Radio, the day after Vatican Radio was inaugurated on the 12th of February 1931, the New York Herald had a headline entitled Scientific Miracle. That's how big it was. The United States sent a film crew on a boat out to Italy, out to Rome, to film the inauguration with Pius XI. It was considered something extraordinary that you could build a radio station that would have a worldwide outreach. Then certainly during the Second World War, the radio played a very important role. We know that the Vatican Radio was the only radio station denouncing the existence of the concentration camps, while many of the Allies were tending to look the other way. Vatican Radio was outrightly denouncing their existence, so much so that Goebbels wanted to bomb out Vatican Radio.
It was banned in Germany, wasn't it? It's broadcast like other radio stations.
Yes, but there were attempts. There was an attempt to bomb Vatican Radio. If you take a visit to the Vatican Gardens today and you walk up to the station, you will see pockmarks on the side of the station wall, which are the results of a gunner's bullets in an attempt during the war to drop a bomb on Vatican Radio. It was considered an extremely uncomfortable presence.
But despite it kept on broadcasting.
We never stopped broadcasting. Another important contribution came after the war. At the end of the war, one of the great tragedies, little talked about tragedies of the war, was the issue of displaced and missing persons. Your husband, father, brother had gone off to war, wherever, and hadn't been heard of since. And Vatican Radio set up under the invitation of Pope Pius XII at that stage, this missing persons announcement service, broadcasting over 1.5 million messages around the world.
It's an incredible number.
And reuniting families, I mean, literally reuniting families. People were able to find their loved ones or get news or simply discover that their husband, brother, father had been killed and they could go and find out where he'd been buried. I mean, very moving human stories.
Now, after the war, of course, the radio expanded enormously, particularly with countries behind the Iron Curtain, as it was then, and, you know, took on more languages. Moving forward further to...
Stop right there.
Okay.
Stop right there, because that's another point which is extremely interesting. And again, our historical memories tend to be very selective. During the Cold War, I joined Vatican Radio in 1977, so I lived through that Cold War. I remember very, very clearly. And when I started teaching communications at the Gregorian University, I had a student from Latvia. Latvia was a particularly repressive communist regime. Churches were closed down, they were turned into sports stadiums and so forth. And she used to tell this story in class of her father tuning their portable radio on the kitchen table to Vatican Radio. He didn't know what was being broadcast, but it didn't matter. The important thing was, since he couldn't possess a Bible or any religious literature, he risked imprisonment or forced labour for doing so, he could at least tune into Vatican Radio.
Although he'd been found out, presumably, there,
and
too.
She would talk about, she would tell the story of how her mother used to run from the kitchen to the front door to check whether the spy might be listening at the door on the landing and they could be reported. And she'd rush back to the kitchen and say, turn it down, turn it down. And he would turn it up, because it was the only gesture of defiance that he could perform to show that he had some kind of connection with his faith and a connection with Rome.
OK, so moving on, though, to, let's say, more modern times, I think one of the key moments in its modern history came during the illness, the death of Pope John Paul II and the election of Pope Benedict. I mean, we saw extraordinary scenes. The radio was in the thick of it, and its website was updated in real time with the events by now in more than 30 languages. I mean, how many people were listening in or clicking in to us then? I mean, it was an extraordinary role for the radio, wasn't it?
Well, ideally, the whole world was, I mean, either directly or indirectly because of our rebroadcasting of the event. But that's always been part of who we are and what we do. The Vatican Radio has always broadcast major events in the Church, including the Second Vatican Council, the elections of the popes, the funerals of the popes. One of my first jobs here at Vatican Radio was to do the live commentary for the funeral of Pope Paul VI, who died on the 6th of August 1978, and that was the extraordinary year of the three popes. A month later, I was doing the inauguration of John Paul I, and then his funeral, and then the inauguration of John Paul II.
Well practiced by the end.
Well, yes. I'm looking forward to doing the beatification of John Paul
II. Indeed, that's going to be another major event. Mm. Right, Vatican Radio's 75th anniversary was marked soon afterwards, of course, by a very special visit by Pope Benedict to its headquarters here. Have all the popes visited the radio, well, with the exception of Pope John Paul I, because of his very brief reign? Have all the popes come here?
They have. Paul VI visited Vatican Radio the day after his election, and Paul VI was a turning point. Paul VI was an incredible intellectual, a very curious man, and someone who understood the power of media and the power of technology and wanted to invest in it. And to show how much he wanted to invest in Vatican Radio, he visited the station the day after he was elected and gave that extraordinary speech where he says, what is the point of having a wonderful instrument if you don't have someone to work that instrument and that instrument doesn't have the right kind of content? So he gave a great impetus to Vatican Radio's production and to the number of languages that we broadcast in.
Right, talking of languages, that first message broadcast by Pope Pius XI 80 years ago was in Latin. And some people are actually surprised that the radio doesn't have a specific programme in Latin. You know, it has, OK, masses in Latin, but, you know, given that it's the official language of the Church, why is that?
That's a question to ask our superiors. You should ask Father Lombardi that question. Many people do ask, yes. And his reply is that our liturgical programs are in Latin, and that Latin is not considered a living language. So it would be a very elitist kind of audience. And well, we have our Latin lover on the English program as well. But it's considered something too elite to invest in as a complete language program.
Do we have any idea how many people listen to us or click on our websites now? This is another question I'm often asked.
Well, it's easy enough to check on the number of visits to the websites. It's impossible to gauge how many people listen to Vatican Radio because so much of what we do is rebroadcast by local radio stations. Anyone can download our programming and rebroadcast that on their local stations, and they have their local audiences. So we work almost as a sort of a domino effect. It's impossible to know at the end how many people are actually listening.
Do we know in which countries they're most listeners? Is it China?
To the whole of Vatican Radio?
To a particular program.
Not so much listeners. People visit the Chinese website.
In vast numbers.
In huge numbers. In ever-increasing numbers. Because where else would you go to get news in Chinese about the Catholic Church, if not the Vatican website? And the same thing is happening, another phenomenon is happening in that regard with our Arabic program. More and more people are visiting the Arabic website to get news of the church in the Arabic language.
Right. It was only a couple of years ago, in fact, in May 2009, that Vatican Radio announced that it was going to be broadcasting commercial advertising for the first time in its history, I believe. The decision was made to meet its rising costs. What are those costs?
Well, the costs are published every year. We're a big red blotch on the Vatican's budget. But then why wouldn't we be, insofar as we're at the service of the Holy See? The idea of the advertising was that it seemed like a child who's been living at home for 80 years, and parents say, well, you know, we don't mind you not paying rent or anything, but it might be nice if you could pay the phone bill every now and again. So that's what the advertising covers. It about covers our phone bill.
Vatican Radio has in the last few years, you know, embraced some of the newest means of communication like YouTube, Twitter, and you mentioned podcasting earlier. Can you tell us a bit more about this and whether there are any other new projects in store and what we can expect in the future? What direction it's moving?
That's the we're moving in the direction the technology is moving. We've always been in the avant-garde of technology. We've always tried to keep pace with technology. It's in our mission statement that we will use all means available. So we look around and we see what is being used and we try to plug into that and latch onto that and see where it can take us. But technology is moving so quickly. If we'd had this conversation a year ago, I would have said Twitter was the thing and we're all tweeting our news items. Well, it's already superseded. It's a year later. We now have a new project called Vatican Tick, which brings together news items from different sources in the Vatican, provides us a kind of almost like a news agency of what's happening in the Vatican. Goodness knows what it will be at this time next year. It really is a case of trying to keep up with the changes and take full advantage of them.
Okay, sure. Well, before we end, you've been here for over 30 years and there's probably memories of people who've been there even before that. Looking back over the radio's history, are there any especially memorable or colourful anecdotes concerning the radio and its employees that you'd like to share with us?
In my own experience, the year of the three popes was extraordinary. The death of Paul VI, the election of John Paul I, the election of John Paul II. And then the many trips with John Paul II at different places around the world, broadcasting in Alaska from an Indian teepee in the middle of the marshlands, going with the Pope to India and going through the House of the Dying with Mother Teresa of Calcutta, visiting Australia. It's the places associated with papal visits would be huge highlights.
I was speaking to Sean Patrick Lovett, director of Vatican Radio's English programme and of its live Italian channel.
Catholic social teaching is an aspect of the life and the thinking of the Catholic Church, an expression of the Catholic faith, which is very important to understand. This then is going to be a very useful website. It will make much more accessible some of the riches of Catholic social teaching.
The voice of Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Westminster, introducing a new website resource on Catholic social teaching that has been launched by a UK network of over 60 charities, religious orders and dioceses. Packed with stories, reflections, prayers, videos and podcasts, the new website has the ideas and actions needed for connecting one's faith to the wider world. The project for launching the new website resource was hosted by the development charity Progressio, named after Pope Paul VI's groundbreaking social encyclical Populorum Progressio. The charity's executive director is Christine Allen, and she tells us how the idea was first conceived.
We've been part of a network called Live Simply, which has been working in the UK to really promote the essence of Catholic social teaching amongst Catholics in England and Wales in particular. And there's about 60 different organisations working with Progressio as part of the Live Simply network. And as the project developed, more and more people were interested in Catholic social teaching and were concerned and finding out about it. And we were all realising that there isn't really a great deal of resources around. You know, there is that whole joke that Catholic social teaching teaching is the church's best kept secret. And of course, in today's technological world, people often look to online website kind of based resources. There's some good stuff in the US, but there was nothing that really kind of belonged to the church in England and Wales. So a small group of us decided, well, it'd be really good to be able to do that. So Progressio was very pleased to be hosting this Catholic social teaching website and to be offering it as a resource to the church. So it kind of came out of the will of the people in some respects.
Okay, before we go any further, perhaps if you'd like to sum up very briefly, what is Catholic social teaching and why do you think it is not sufficiently well known? It's not been publicised enough.
Catholic social teaching is the main kind of written resource of the church. We normally, when we talk about Catholic social teaching, are referring to documents like bishops' conference statements or papal encyclicals like Caritas in Veritate. And there's a raft of really, really rich documentation that's available. And Catholic social teaching, in terms of the documentation, is a way of reflecting, helping us to reflect on our lives. So when popes and bishops write statements and documents, they're aimed as learning documents, they're aimed as resources for people to think on and reflect about and act on the challenges of today's society. So Catholic social teaching's issues include basic principles around human dignity, around solidarity, around the responsibility to the environment and to one another, rights of workers and economic justice, and of course work for peace, development and economic sustainability. I think why it's so much a kind of the best kept secret is very often the documents themselves are quite impenetrable. They're quite difficult for people to get their head around. Certainly here in the UK, we've done a lot of work in a number of organisations, including Progressio, to produce kind of simplified versions and to help people kind of reflect on documents. We've also, as Progressio, just produced a short reflection piece on Caritas in Veritate. Also, I think another issue is that the church doesn't really promote it particularly well. Sometimes I think because it is quite a political message, Catholic social teaching is very challenging, I think, to the status quo. It asks us to think differently about how we see the world, about who benefits and who gains and who loses out in our society. And it's quite a challenging agenda, really, as indeed is our fundamental faith, a challenging agenda.
So coming back to your website, basically, as I understand it then, you're trying to make Catholic social teaching more accessible by linking it to real-life stories. Is that it?
The website does link very much to the real-life stories of people. I mean, our aim with the website is for it to be a resource to bring Catholic social teaching to life, to help people to reflect on the issues and to understand what Catholic social teaching is about. And we do this in a variety of different ways, through podcasts where people kind of reflect on particular stories or reflect on particular issues, through stories, illustrations of how people have put Catholic social teaching into practice. There's prayer resources as well, and there's a couple of videos there too. So it's very much about trying to help people to engage with Catholic social teaching. You know, we're kind of calling it sort of, you know, bringing social teaching to life and sort of faith in a better world, because it is very much a practical issue, really, Catholic social teaching. It's about the kind of everyday realities that we face. Catholic social teaching doesn't provide a manifesto. It's not an easy answer, but it's a means to help people reflect, to help all of us reflect on how we respond to the challenges of our world. And in the website, we've got key themes that people can kind of click on and find out more information, see what the church says about different issues. And those issues are things like human dignity, the call to community and participation, care for creation, life and work is one of the headings which looks at workers and economic justice, and also peace and solidarity. So these will incorporate key principles within Catholic social teaching, such as the common good.
You talked there about encyclicals, and you said that you had a feature focusing on a reflection of Caritas in Veritate by Pope Benedict. And of course, as you well know, ever since, you know, 1891, various popes have written encyclicals dealing with social issues. And the name of your organization, Progressio, I gather, takes the name from Pope Paul the VI's encyclical, Populorum Progressio. Why did you choose that particular encyclical for your name? What was particularly striking about what he was saying in it?
As the Catholic Institute for International Relations, which was our old name, we were concerned about a just world. We were concerned about poverty and inequality and tackling social justice. And the issue, the whole fundamental question of Populorum Progressio, the encyclical by Paul VI in 1968, was about all those issues. And the other thing that he talked about was posed that very question, what is progress? What is it that we're talking about? And our vision for development as an organization is very much a holistic vision. It's not just about economic linear development, but actually about the whole person. And that was very much something that was at the very heart of the message of Populorum Progressio, which was a watershed document for the Church post-Vatican Council. And it's a phenomenal document. And if you, even reading it today, you know, in the 21st century, there are areas where it's a little bit dated, but the fundamental issues about the economy of the world, international cooperation, about peace and about what does it mean for development, are absolutely as telling and as relevant today as they were when they were written.
Now, of course, the popes have written a whole series of encyclicals over the past century or so. Are there any other papal encyclicals on social issues or even papal documents that weren't encyclicals that stand out? If so, what are they?
Well, there's quite a few, really. There's a very powerful one called Justice in the World that was actually a synod document in 1971 rather than a specific papal encyclical. And that was a very important document around. There's a really famous quote that says in that document, action for peace and justice is a constituent element to preaching the gospel. So telling us that we don't just read the Bible, we live it. We make gospel real through our lives, through our commitment to working for peace and for justice, working for a better world. As you said, popes and bishops have spoken about a whole raft of issues, and I think it's really important that the world out there, as it were, understands that the Church has a view and has very strong and challenging views around how the world should be. The injustices of the economic system might be quite complex and politically sensitive, but they are moral issues too. And that's what Catholic social teaching is saying. There is this ethical, moral dimension.
Coming back to the website, what is the main audience or users of this new website? Who are you aiming it for, or who's going to be tapping into it and clicking on it?
We've worked to identify some key target audiences, which are mainly people who are going to be educators or who are catechists or people who are kind of linking in with the Church as sort of formation people as a resource for them, schools and students as well, and perhaps even seminarians and clergy. I mean, my own parish priest actually spoke to me about it quite recently, saying, oh, some really good stuff on that website, you know.
Right, you talked about that enthusiastic response from your own parish priest, but in a wider sense, what kind of a feedback have you had so far to it, and what are you finding are the most clicked upon stories or resources?
We've certainly had a lot of really positive feedback from people saying, you know, this is great, this is amazing, I can't believe you've done it on such a shoestring. I'm not totally sure exactly what's the most clicked upon, most interested thing. I would invite all Vatican Radio listeners to go and click and let us know. It would be great to find out what your views are.
I was talking to Christine Allen, Executive Director of the charity Progressio. And for those wanting to take up that offer of hers to check out the new website, you can find it at www.catholicsocialteaching.org.uk. Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.